Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host, Cosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And what's up, brother? I've returned from the roadshow, the wilderness.
No more roadshow. Hopefully the sound quality is a little bit better.
A little bit better, but yeah, but thank you all for listening in on our roadshow episodes. We had a lot of fun with that. We had a lot of cool guests.
We had a big two-hour roadshow episode.
Yeah, we did.
Jackie likes to talk, man. Shout out to Jackie Legs.
Yeah, shout out to her. She loves to talk, but also it's just great stuff that we were talking about in that Severance episode. So
Severance is definitely one of the all-time shows going on right now. But so for today's episode, we got a special heavy trailer trash focused episode.
All trailer trash, guys.
All trailer trash.
Oh man.
We are basically looking at a bunch of trailers. There's been a lot of releases. We haven't really looked at too many trailers in the past few weeks, so we're going to try to run through a lot of, not just movie trailers, but even a couple video game trailers.
Yes, we are. I think whenever we do these big trailer trash blowouts, I think I mentioned it off air, but we always include a couple video game trailers. So I think we have two actually really cool ones.
Yeah, with the Nintendo Switch 2 releasing.
Yes.
Big gaming news at the moment. We have a couple of trailers to look at from Nintendo before we sign off. But starting off, we'll go with our bread and butter, Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four. Yeah, man. Yes, it's dude, this is a Fantastic Four. They're coming back to the MCU. This is the 37th movie.
It's a proper trailer. We see the whole setup, basically, where, you know, we kind of have an opening. So it seems like we have a bit of an origin story where we see how these people get their powers and such.
They're like some kind of like a TV show, kind of like a Johnny Carson show, and they're introducing them to the audience and kind of to us a little bit.
Exactly. And we see shots of Julia Gardner as a Silver Surfer.
Yes, yes.
We see little shadows and glimpses of Galactus. I think we mentioned it the last time we talked about this trailer, but a very Jetsons kind of Tomorrowland retro futuristic chic. Right, a lot of especially that TV show you talked about, it looks like something out of a 50s Johnny Carson show. Well, it's Johnny Carson, even before Johnny Carson.
Even before then, yeah, like Space Age.
Yeah, Space Age type Johnny type talk shows. And we see that mixed in with obviously the space suits, the more futuristic Marvel-y CGI. It's I really like the aesthetic, right?
Definitely good aesthetic. So Matt Jackman, he's the director. He also directed WandaVision. He is the one that's helming this movie. He has such a great eye for, you know, harkening back to old TV. He was an old TV actor in his younger days, so he really has an eye for really engrossing us in this new world, which, you know, this isn't a spoiler, this is a whole other universe from the current 616. So
yes,
it has a whole different feel. It really does have a whole like saccharine sweet simple time feel to it. Watching this trailer,
it does it feels optimistic.
Yeah,
is the right word. Hopeful. Optimistic and nostalgic at the same time. Again, that's retro future is kind of the vibe, right? When you go for that, you know, just thinking about the Jetsons, something that came out in Hanna-Barbera back in the day. That's really what this movie kind of envisions. We see them talk about time as well a few times, specifically, almost ominously mentioned that they need more time.
Yeah, they're and when it kind of took a turn for the ominous part of the trailer, there's a fight to either save someone. Definitely, I think a big key point is that we find out that Sue Storm is pregnant in a great scene that I think really encaptured the whole team. Johnny Storm, played by Joseph Quinn, being excited for his sister, all that, you know, taking a dig at Reed Richards. But yeah, that they need more time maybe to save or protect that newborn baby.
I think there's going to be a time travel type element.
I would be surprised.
Maybe we see them, you know, fly up into or multiverse shenanigans where they try reset time with that. We already saw some time jumping shenanigans in Endgame.
Yeah.
So it's established that this is possible in this type of universe. And we even see Reed say something along the lines of how them messing with space-time or something
they're meddling
might have
with
been
it.
The one that might have been the thing that alerted the Silver Surfer or Galactus to come in and kind of fuck their shit up.
Yeah, and speaking of Silver Surfer, so as we can see, this the one played by Julia Garner, she is another version of the Silver Surfer. So the Silver Surfer, is someone who has the power cosmic powers of Galactus, and they wield different people have wielded the powers. We know Norrin Radd as the original one that we've seen, you know, in the 2007 movie, but this version is Shala Baal, who is a companion or some aspects lover of Norrin Radd. So we're getting that version. I believe we're going to see his version at some point. But but she's serving again how he would as his herald. Whenever Galactus comes to eat a planet, the Silver Surfer comes and tells the planet, hey, you guys are screwed. You have 7 days, whatever, and bounces. So it's cool to see all that. And then to just find out that Sue's pregnant, just to see that struggle now. Now it's something personal for the team to fight against. So yeah, this looks awesome. It's a great big summer movie that I've been super excited for. There's Superman, and then there's this movie that I'm super, super excited for.
Definitely. We'll also see a couple of callbacks to that 2007 movie.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Where, I don't know if it was the 2007 one, but we see, the Sue Storm callback with
her doing the shield.
Doing the shield. It looks just like Jessica Alba.
Yeah.
We see Johnny Storm chase after the Silver Surfer. Mm-hmm. A big part of the movie was Johnny Storm taking on the Silver Surfer head on, because he's the only ones that can really fly and keep up with him directly.
She in the trailer, the Shala Baal Silver Surfer, she phased through that helicopter just the way he did through the train. Again, a lot of cool callbacks that they're doing, but also they're doing something really, really new and exciting with this. So I'm just really excited for this movie that it comes out July. We're like about 3 months away from watching this. So July, again, is looking like a really huge month. We have that, Superman, and Jurassic Park, I believe, in all one
big
summer.
Big month for movies.
Big month.
All right, so next trailer, 28 years later.
Ooh, baby.
We first had 28 days later, 28 weeks
later.
Did we ever have 28 months?
No, but I thought that would be what...
You would have thought that would be the follow-up, but they probably thought it was too goofy to do it back in the day.
Yeah,
it hasn't quite been 28 years.
It's been close to 20 years. The last one that came out, 28 weeks later, came out in 2007. So it's been 18
it's been
years.
It's been close to 20 years since the last one. So good chunk of time. No, listen, it is a more, looks like a more direct horror action-y vibe of zombie movie.
Definitely going back to the 28 days later approach, where, you know, we're getting in your face visceral zombie violence in this. Shaky cam violence.
Yeah, very creepy zombies, mm-hmm. not just rotting husks, ambling forward, slowly tearing everything apart. This feels like a horror movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
A very creepy monster movie. A lot of different type of zombies we've shown. A lot of very well-shot and scary scenes.
Yeah, Danny Boyle returns. He's a director written by Alex Garland. Alex Garland, you know, he wrote stuff like Warfare that's in theaters. Wrote stuff like Civil War, Ex Machina. So they're teaming up once again to do this. And yeah, it looks like survival horror. You can see a lot of things that are shot like, almost like on handheld camera. Danny Boyle said that he shot some of this using like iPhone stuff, so it looks disorienting. Just to harken back to the earlier movies. But this, again, just this cast, Jodie Comer, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Ralph Fiennes, Lord Voldemort himself is in this. It looks great, and I'm super excited. Not much is known about this movie, and I'm glad. I want to go in, you know, with little as much. They have a little bit of a log line. It just takes place 28 years after that first rage virus spread out, and just follows just a group of survivors that are trying to maintain this, you know, little piece of island that's like closed off from all the infected. So yeah, this looks amazing. Looks creepy.
A lot of cool scenes in the trailer. Hopefully it's not all the cool scenes.
Yeah, no, I hope so too. I trust Danny Boyle. I've liked all of his movies. They all have a very distinct style, very kinetic, frenetic type energy to him that's mm-hmm. become a Danny Boyle staple. And then Alex Garland, he's just an amazing storyteller and writer. So again, I just love that pairing. So I love that for this movie coming out this June in theater. So again, summer's looking pretty packed.
Pretty stacked, for sure. All right, next movie, Him.
Ooh,
Jordan Peele produced.
Yes, produced.
Not directed. They yes. make sure to put his name front and center, just so you yes, know. But it's a black horror movie, so you can tell why.
Yeah, but it's directed by Justin Tipping. He's done movies like Kicks. Did the show called Flatbush Misdemeanors, which is actually a show that I've watched and I enjoy it. So I've watched some of his stuff, but this is his first feature film.
Yes. So it's basically, it follows Marlon Wayans?
So Marlon Wayans plays an old football player.
An old football player slash coach, kind of a private coach maybe.
Yeah.
And we see, I don't know the guy's name, but we see the guy from the Atlanta episode, the self-hating black dude guy. That kind of looks like a white guy.
Yeah, the racially ambiguous guy, but turns out he was black.
He kind of looks like a black Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum mixed with Patrick Mahomes a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's a good description.
Tyrick Weathers is the actor's name. Yeah.
He feels like it does on purpose a little bit, you know, putting him as a football star and this kind of stuff.
When I saw him, I was like, oh man, it's that guy.
So it feels like a little bit of an allegory for the, like a horror allegory for, you know, the difficulty, the sacrifice. We repeatedly say Marlon Wayans, like, what are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to give up?
For the game.
How much are you willing to do? How far are you willing to go for this? Which is something every coach is telling their, you know, their young stars at that age, right? Definitely. Hey, you want to go to college? You want to go to D1? You want to go to NFL? You know, what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to do? It's not going to be easy.
Yeah, like, it really does. It puts a horrific spin to something that, like, a lot of these young athletes aspire to. A lot of them are willing to sacrifice and make these changes or go through these things that they need to do in order to get to the next level. And I just love how Jordan Peele, again, he finds a way to find horror in everything. And, you know, something like this where even from the... I love how there was a part in the trailer where he got a... it went x-ray almost and he got a concussion. Yeah. And, like, it kind of... like
Mortal Kombat fatality.
Right? And, like, but then right when that happened, everything kind of had a whole shift to being like scary and like really off kilter. And I love that they're going to really tap into that. And, you know, this whole factory of like of making this player, making the perfect player, you know, what goes into that. And I just love the horror aspect of that.
So, instead of, for instance, showing him practicing too hard, you just show him like in cult doing cult shit.
Yeah.
Weird like rituals, meeting with weird people.
Some guy with an axe in his hand. Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, going to be just basically kind of an allegory for it, like, hey, what do you sacrifice? What is it worth to you? How far are you willing to go? Is really the tagline of the movie, right?
Yep. How far will you go? And I love that that's something that they're going to be tackling. No pun intended.
It has little bit of a similar vibe to Late Night with the Devil.
Late Night with the Devil. Also, Get Out. I'm getting a lot of Get Out vibes too. This feels like early Jordan Peele. Again, he's definitely producing, but Justin Tipping has, again, just from his Flatbush Misdemeanors that I've watched, he definitely has an eye for capturing personal stories and his shot selection. He's really, you know, it's almost like music video esque how he approaches these things. They're flashy, they're big, but also he tries to make sure that you're really keyed in on, you know, the character and who they are. So, and it shows in even how he makes it. So I'm really excited for his work, which comes out this September. So it's you know, a couple months away, but I'm definitely looking forward to this movie here.
Absolutely. It looks very exciting. Very very artistic as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, next trailer, Megan 2.0.
Ooh.
After the big horror surprise of the year.
Surprise hit, 2023. So, Megan, yeah. So, Juan, you haven't seen that first Megan.
I actually
Megan.
Missed out on Megan. Okay. I'm sad about that.
It's a lot of fun. You know, I understand. You know, it didn't... You know, like, it definitely had a lot of memes. You probably saw the robot girl dancing in the hallway. It became a whole thing. So, but, you know, it grew into box office money for that first movie, and it was a huge hit. So, obviously, it made sense that they went and made a sequel. But, okay, as someone that hasn't, like, seen anything from this, what did you think of that trailer?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was... I was honestly expecting almost a Chucky vibe from it.
Yeah.
But it seems like, and in some ways, it does seem like a little bit of a modern Chucky.
Yeah.
But it just seems more fun. Like, the doll is actually kind of funny. And like,
it's got quips.
Yeah, it's got quips. The kills are like so over the top brutal that, you know, you almost have fun with it as opposed to just like being too shocked. I thought it was a really fun trailer. The concept of like, oh, hey, it's the second Megan. but there's also a Megan 2.0 in the movie, like a superior new Megan that she has to fight.
Like,
I love that little wordplay there.
Definite T2 vibes. This definitely is the T2 Terminator 2 to the original Terminator, yes. Where they're bringing back Megan to fight for the good side.
I love how they put her in a little Tamagotchi pet at the beginning, and she's just sitting there like freaking out. Like, come on,
guys,
man!
Guys, come on! No, I love that. Yeah, I'll also echo your sentiment. It looks like a lot of fun, and also really great kind of evolution from the first one. Because you know, at the end of the first Megan, this isn't a spoiler, but Megan's defeated, so we're like, all right, that's great. But they left some room open for a sequel, and they went with it. And the route they took, I really love this. Like, the first Megan was kind of almost like a techno horror. This feels almost like action horror, a little bit of action, like suspense. But there's a lot of action in here, which was not in the first one. These are new elements, which I love. I love how they're taking the character and taking the story and you know, making it their own and also pushing it forward. So I love that. I'm definitely looking forward to that. Akilah Cooper is a writer on this. She's one of my favorite horror writers. She wrote Malignant. I don't know if you've seen Malignant.
Yes, so I love that.
She wrote that. So she's becoming one of my... And she wrote the first Megan.
That was an absurd movie.
Yeah, so she's become one of my favorite horror writers. So like whenever Akilah Cooper's name is attached to any project, I'm watching day one. So, and Gerard Johnstone, he directed the first one. That pairing, they're such a great pairing with James Wan producing. Yeah, this has become a surprise franchise. Like, I see this getting a third. This looks awesome. So you know, hopefully it's as successful as the first one. Because
yeah, hopefully they keep it up. Hopefully it's as good as the first one.
Yeah, Megan Cube. I don't know. Hey, take that, Hollywood. You can take my idea.
When does it come out?
This one comes out. Oh man, June 27th. So again, more, this is the summer.
More summer movies.
Yeah. Yes. So look out for that, guys.
All right. So last movie of today, Tron: Ares.
Tron.
Follow-up to Tron Legacy, which, of course, is the follow-up to the 1970s Tron movie.
1982 Tron movie,
yeah, 1982.
Man. That's a long time ago.
I always trip out by the fact that even the original Tron movie was a Disney movie.
Yes, I kind of almost forget that you know, it's Disney movie. It's one of the first almost like fully CGI or heavily CGI movies for the time. It was groundbreaking at the time of 1982 when it came out. So, yeah, I forget that was a Disney property. Yeah.
You had Tron Legacy when it came out. Well, not the best story in the world, but the visuals, the music in particular.
Daft Punk.
Daft Punk hit it out the park.
My goodness.
It was a fun, it was a cool movie to watch.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
It was a cool kind of a Matrix, modern Matrix vibe.
Modern Matrix, yeah.
Again, nowhere near as good as storytelling, but the visuals were and the music, the production values of the movie were spectacular.
Yeah,
we see some of that here.
Definitely right? See that right away.
We see the iconic speed bikes.
Yeah, the light bikes that light can bikes. Like they have like the little the hard little light trail. Yeah, but then the real world now. We've always seen them like in digital
the Tron
world.
Now we see crashing the world, meeting the world,
slicing through.
We see one of these bikes slashing through a cop car. We see the big mothership.
Oh, that was awesome scene. That's such a again. It's unsettling to see that because, again, that's the fact that they're in our world now, and to see that visual of it going through a city, it's, oh, man, and taking on helicopters and shooting them, it's awesome.
We hear a little bit of Jeff Bridges. We don't see him.
Yeah.
And we see multiple glimpses of Jared Leto. Clearly going to be the protagonist, but we don't really see what his... It's mostly a teaser. We don't really see too much of what's going on. Other than to know that there's the Tron world is coming to the real world and there's going to be some kind of war.
Yeah.
We see military planes, F-35s or something.
They're definitely engaging that big
trying
ship.
Trying to engage and getting blown up. It's a war. It's a war between the Tron world and the real world. Definitely excited to see where they go with it.
Yeah. And also, speaking of which, we talked about, you know, the visuals and also the Daft Punk's soundtrack. They brought Nine Inch Nails to come and do the music. So kind of following in that whole tradition now of bringing on, you know, a mainstream producer music. So Trent Reznor, he's an incredible composer. So he's composed a lot of movies, a lot of music for a lot of David Fincher's movies. So Gone Girl is one that I personally love a lot. And also the cinematography, also Jeff Cronenweth, he's also worked on a lot of David Fincher's movies. So this movie, as much I'm really, what makes me excited for it is it will have that look and sound that we get in a lot of Fincher movies, which I really do think kind of fits this whole motif of, if you're going to bring the Tron digital world into our world and kind of have a sound for the melding of the two, I really trust Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross as guys that could find that sound. So I'm really excited just for the music as well, by Nine Inch Nails for this movie.
Yeah, no, definitely going to be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah, and Tron Ares comes out October 10th of 2025, so look out for that, guys.
A little bit later this year.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're switching it up to video games.
Video games.
Going full Nintendo.
Oof.
On the audience. So it's not even official trailers, frankly. It was just part of the Nintendo Direct, the big Nintendo Direct that announced the Switch 2, the full details of the Switch 2.
Man, are you going to get the Switch 2?
I probably am.
I'm thinking about it too. Just looking at these trailers alone.
I've been a Nintendo fanboy for a long
time. Same here. You know? Same here.
No, the trailers look pretty good. So first one again to Mario Kart World. The first truly new Mario Kart, I mean, we're talking in more than a decade. Mario Kart 8 came out for the Wii U near the beginning of the Wii U, and then they just renamed it to Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for the Switch, and that's pretty much all we ever had. We never had a proper Switch release of Mario Kart.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
The biggest they had was that they had some kind of expansion where they released a bunch of additional tracks and characters and stuff for Mario Kart. But they never properly released a new Mario Kart game the whole Switch's life. And considering the Switch is one of the best-selling systems ever, that's a pretty big statement. Mm. So they're fixing that by making Mario Kart World the big release game for the Switch. Right? As we saw from the Direct, the biggest change this time is that it's an open-world Mario Kart.
That's insane that they... When I heard that, I was like, wait, what? You can drive anywhere?
You like literally drive from track to track. Oh, that's so cool. There's a free play mode where you can just drive around, take pictures and
stuff. That's awesome, too.
You could probably mess with people and knock them off good parts of the tracks. We'll see. There are up to 24 players on a track, which is another big change for the series.
Yeah, I think the most in the series, yeah.
By far. I think before they had up to 16, but even that was Mario Kart Double Dash when it was 2-2 a kart.
Classic game.
Right? I don't think they've ever had proper 24 people racing at once.
Yeah.
The trailer goes into a couple modes. They show a bunch of tracks. They show costumes and stuff. You know, at the end of the day, it's Mario Kart. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have some changes. They show some grinding on off rails.
Off the walls. Yeah,
off the walls.
That was really
Tony
cool.
Hawk style shit.
That was really cool,
They
actually.
Show a guy get into a big SUV, 18-wheeler, and drive around. I don't know if that's an item or just something you can do on
certain
levels.
It looks like it's an item that you collect. Yeah.
They definitely show some exciting stuff. They show that your car can fly. They can swim. Mm-hmm. Depending on the course, they can they can transform into all kinds of stuff. And it looks beautiful.
It does. It really does.
It looks stunning. The Switch 2 is not really quite at the level of a PS5, right? And it is, cheaper than a PS5 to compensate for it. But it is going to be substantially better than the Switch. The Switch has always been well behind its peers, even when it released, in terms of graphical power.
It did look good, like visually it looks.
Yeah, it looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
The character models look sharp. It looks bright, well colored. The worlds look very detailed. It looks like it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah. Most definitely.
It looks like it's going to be a fun time. Looks like they're doing several things on the Switch, too, to make it easier to connect with people and play with them, even if they don't have the game themselves. One of the frustrating parts about games like this is if you want to play with your friends, that means all the bros have to buy it at the same time. They'll have to have their own Switch, their own game.
Mm.
For a $60 game, that can be tricky to justify and get people, get your friends going. So the fact that you can share it with them from one system makes it a little bit more friendly for multiplayer.
I definitely love that. Yeah. No, as a guy that's played the Mario Karts for the past, 25 years, I like the fact they had this be open world. Like, seriously, when you said that, that's a big selling point to me. I can just go off track, but also just being able to play with a lot more people and with a lot more other players. Definitely have a bigger roster. I saw some other players like Kamek one of my favorites on there. Yeah, some. I think we'll have an even bigger roster.
They have Cow.
They
have the crab. You know the crab from the old school? Like,
oh, I didn't even notice that guy.
They don't show it in this one. They showed it in the direct that came out a few days ago.
Okay.
They basically have a bunch of stage hazards as characters. I think they have a dolphin. I think they have a random dolphin as a character. They went all out. Not Super Smash level, but they will put a bunch of random playable characters. You'll be able to find somebody you like to play with.
Yeah, it says here it featured over 40 playable characters. So definitely somebody that anybody would want to play on there is on. So, yeah.
Definitely. All the classics and a bunch of new goofy characters to enjoy with.
Yeah. So I think, we'll have to wait too long. This comes out on June 5th on the Nintendo Switch, the same day that the Nintendo Switch drops. Which
Nintendo
is,
Switch 2, yes. Hopefully the tariffs don't mess that up for everybody.
Yeah, thanks a lot, President.
Thanks a lot, Trump. All right, so this is not quite a Switch release game. I think it comes out in July.
Yeah.
But pretty soon. Donkey Kong Bonanza.
Bonanza with a bonanza.
Yeah, like banana, but bonanza, yeah.
I see what you're doing there.
No, it's the first 3D Donkey Kong game since Donkey Kong 64.
Yep, since 64.
And it's the first Donkey Kong game platformer that Nintendo has made internally instead of outsourcing to Rare Studios. Yeah. They made all the Donkey Kong Country games as well as Donkey Kong 64.
Yes, so this is the first one. This is the first major one since Tropical Freeze in 2014. This will be.
Yes. So it's been over 10 years since we had a proper Donkey Kong game. Oh, we had two remakes on the Switch, but no new Donkey Kong games. So this is the first one. And just off the bat, it looks like basically like not just the new Donkey Kong game, but almost like the new Mario game.
Like, yeah,
this Mario is the same team that made Super Mario Odyssey, which is the big Switch flagship for Mario. We haven't had a 3D, new 3D Mario game since then either, and this is almost like they combined both into one. The big change in this game right away, we can see, is that Donkey Kong, they let him smash everything.
He goes everywhere. Yeah. It's awesome.
He can jump anywhere. You know, he's a big ape, but obviously he can climb all kinds of walls and stuff. He's a very strong character. He can just dig into the ground.
Yeah, the environments pounding. Are destructive. He can break anything.
He can just break the ground, get a rock, and just start smashing through stuff. They've shown a lot of gameplay where they'll have underground caves and things you can dig into.
And golden coins in there.
Basically, you can explore the levels any way you want. You can either go jump around them, climb the walls, or you can just go through them and destroy the level.
Yep.
Right? They're very different ways to attack the game, enjoy the game. It's a very interesting thing to see. It looks beautiful.
Gorgeous looking.
It looks beautiful. The biggest, for Donkey Kong's fans, the biggest controversy you might have noticed, and they did it with the Mario Kart 2, is that they switched the Donkey Kong design.
He does look a little bit different.
He looks like the movie Donkey Kong.
Definitely looks like the Mario Brothers movie.
Is the original Donkey Kong design from Nintendo back even in the 80s. Right? If you look at the instruction booklets, if you look at old Donkey Kong, he has the wider nose, he has the bigger fur, he looked the kind of goofier look. Mm. Rare Donkey Kong, which started with Donkey Kong Country, had that more sleek look we've been used to since forever.
Yeah.
Since the late 90s.
They even brought that over to his design in Super Smash Brothers Melee, like in Super Smash Brothers.
All
like,
those Super Smash Bros. Games have featured that design. Mm-hmm. The Mario Bros. Movies where we first started seeing
a
kind of classic redesign.
Well, not even redesign, it's like what he used to look like. Yeah.
But even that, it was like what he used to look like on like 2D drawings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It was not like what he looked like in the games. The games were just pixels.
Right.
Right? So it's kind of redesigned it to look more like the original Donkey Kong was supposed to look like. So that's kind of the biggest controversy related to this game, as well as the fact that, you know, if you've been a Donkey Kong Country fan for a while,
like myself,
the Donkey Kong Country Returns and Jungle Freeze games were amazing 2D classics, definitely very inspired by the original games. And so obviously if you were expecting something like that, this feels like it has some. We see a few 2D stages.
You still get the feel. Yeah, you get that classic Donkey Kong Country.
We see a few of those.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Mario Odyssey as well, where they had a few classic 2D Mario stages. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're expecting, like, just that type of game, obviously you can be a little bit disappointed.
Of course.
It's obviously not going to be that same feel. Probably not going to be as hard. Those Donkey Kong games were all brutally difficult and not entirely meant for a wide audience, whereas Mario games, and this looks like the big one of the big Switch releases, so it'll probably more to the Mario wide release type difficulty rather than the Donkey Kong Country type, beat your ass and make you die repeatedly every single level type difficulty. But I'm still excited to see it. It looks like a lot of fun. It looks beautiful.
Again, it does.
It looks extremely gorgeous. The art direction, the world direction. Nintendo's always done a great job of making games look beautiful, even when their graphics weren't all that special.
Yeah.
Just by, you know, making cool creatures, cool character designs, cool art choices. And now that they have a little bit more power, they're really showing out what they can do in these special worlds and these special games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely excited to see that. Comes out
July 17th on July the Nintendo 17th, Switch.
So about a month after the Switch comes out.
Yep, looking forward to that one.
Definitely, definitely. And then one last trailer we had talked about, we had looked at, Metroid Prime.
Oh man, yes.
Metroid Prime 4.
This took me back as a kid that played Metroid Prime and Metroid Prime 2 Echoes on the GameCube. Watching the gameplay of Metroid Prime 4 was awesome. Yeah, I love that.
It looks very much like
Metroid Prime 4 Beyond is what it's called.
Yeah, Metroid Prime Beyond. First Metroid Prime game since the Wii. So they skipped, you know, it's almost been 10, 15 years.
Yeah, close to 10 years. Yeah.
Maybe over 10 years. Long time. We've seen some other Metroid games since then, mostly 2D Metroid games or offshoots, but we have not seen a proper
traditional, like, sequel.
Sequel since. We haven't seen a proper 3D Metroid game since the Wii.
Yeah.
So they skipped the Wii U and the Switch for it. And frankly, the last 3D Metroid game that came out wasn't that great. Metroid Other M was not particularly well received.
Okay, yeah, I never played that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't highly recommend it.
I haven't played anything past Echoes at this point.
They did remake Metroid Prime, remaster it for the Switch.
Okay.
HD makeover. It looked really nice.
Okay.
Right? It's not just your usual remaster where they just slapped on a fresh coat of paint. They actually, you know, I mean, it's still the same game, but they went out of their way
to make it look better.
Modern.
Yeah.
Right? To make it look closer to a modern game. Definitely a lot more effort than most traditional remasters. And obviously part of the reason they were doing that was to hype people up for the return of Metroid Prime 4. So I'm glad they got to give people that experience.
Oh yeah, most
definitely. This is an all-time gaming experience. Metroid Prime, if you're around in the early 2000s, it changed the game.
Yeah, it's a flagship game for the GameCubes. It's up there with Super Smash Bros. Melee as a flagship game for
The best games on the GameCube. Not just on the GameCube, but any game at the time.
Yeah.
Strong competitor to Halo for sci-fi single-player game.
Yeah.
Shooter.
It made Samus Aran almost a household name in video games. Like she's up there as a icon in video games. It's a great series. So to see it make its return, triumphant return back to Nintendo with this fourth installment, it's really really cool to see that.
Definitely excited to see it. And this is the first game that is both a Switch and Switch 2 release.
Yes, yes.
I'm not even sure if it has an official release date yet.
I've been looking to see when to announce when it's coming out. I'm not seeing. It just says 2025.
Yeah, so it's supposed to come out this year.
Yeah,
hopefully it doesn't get delayed. It's been in development for a while. They
since
actually had
2019.
It actually restarted development at one point.
Yeah.
Nintendo outright announced that the game was not performing up to its expectations.
Yeah.
So they just restarted.
Yeah, I think it was announced
development.
It was announced in 2017 at E3, and then they had to restart it in 2019. So
yes, that was a big deal. Usually companies don't do stuff like that, but Nintendo knows how important this game is to the reputation. They know how beloved and how high quality the Metroid games are regarded.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of game you can just toss out. Not to say you can toss out Mario games, but it's easier to toss out certain games. And, you know, it can be a little more goofy. It can be a little more rough around the edges. The graphics don't have to be as amazing in a Mario Party game or the writing as amazing in a Kirby game. But Metroid Prime 4 is kind of their, I don't know, not just, it's one of their flagships, but it's also kind of their prestige series.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Right, it's a series where they put a lot more effort into the writing. It's the series where the story actually follows up one from the other instead of just jumping around. It's a series with a lot more, you know, thorny questions and interesting writing than obviously the latest Mario game.
Right.
So I'm very excited to see where they go with it. I'm very excited they've been bringing it back. The last 2D Metroid game for the Switch was excellent. Metroid Prime, Metroid Echoes? No, it wasn't Echoes. I can't remember. Metroid Dread.
Dread, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Metroid Dread. It was a follow-up to Super Metroid and those games.
Okay.
Really fun game as well. They're very different and difficult game. It's not 3D exploration. It's 2D kind of exploration and combat. But the fact that they managed to make such a good game for the Switch makes me feel hopeful they understand how important it is to get Metroid Prime 4 correct and make an excellent game for us.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this game.
Yeah, definitely as well. Hopefully, big releases for the Switch 2. Yes, big indeed. Releases for the Switch 2 as soon as it comes out.
All right, Juan.
All right, so I think it's time for that Plug of the Week.
Plug of the Week. All right, Juan, I'll tee off this Plug of the Week. So this week, my Plug of the Week is actually the TED TV series. This is
like the little teddy bear?
Yeah, little teddy bear. So, you know, so Seth MacFarlane made a movie called TED back in 2012 about this teddy bear that came to life, starring Mark Wahlberg and Mila Kunis. So this is a story of, you know, of Mark Wahlberg's character when he was in high school, so back set in the 90s. So just TED and Mark Wahlberg, you know, going through high school, just getting into hijinks. And look, I love the Ted movie. The first Ted movie is hilarious. The second one I thought was okay, but still funny. But this Ted series, I watched the whole thing. It's a 7-episode season one. It's on Peacock. I blew right through these. These are like 35-minute episodes, but insanely hilarious. I laughed like from start to finish, and it's one of those shows where it definitely has a Family Guy edge with humor. Definitely feels like it feels like you're watching sometimes like live action cutscenes at points, but it also has a lot of heart and also the cast. So Seth MacFarlane, he stars as Ted. Max Burholder, he plays John, so the younger Mark Wahlberg's character, John Bennett. Alana Ubach, she's a great voice actress and singer. Scott Grimes, you may not recognize him, but he's also the voice of Steve Smith on American Dad. Also great singing voice, but he plays the dad on here. And Georgia Wiggum, she plays John's cousin. So this cast is fantastic, and just their dynamic of going from, oh my gosh, did they just say that, to, oh man, real heartwarming moments. It's really, it kind of, the way it can just switch to that is really, really great. And I love it. I've laughed start to finish, all 7 episodes. And so I highly recommend it as a show to watch. It is on Peacock. And yeah, I just love this show so much. Okay. That's my Plug of the Week.
So for my Plug of the Week, I'm going to continue the Apple hype. I'm going to plug Your Friends and Family. It's a new show on Apple TV. It's a familiar kind of premise. If you've watched Breaking Bad and Ozark, basically rich dudes some dude's life falls apart and he kind of turns to a criminal world to make up for it. In this case, to make money and to continue on with his life. We see basically he's a really rich hedge fund type financial guy, lives in a super wealthy gated neighborhood with NBA players and restaurant here owners, high level rich, if not millionaires, maybe even some billionaires, just the kind of people, the 1% basically. And so basically when this guy, his life falls apart, his wife leaves him for an NBA player he was friends with, his job fires him for hooking up with a younger co-worker, everything kind of starts to fall apart from him. He decides, all right, well, I'm going to turn to petty crime, except instead of stealing from random people or grocery stores and stuff, Best Buys, I don't know, he steals from his friends and neighbors. So he walks into the millionaires that he knows and he's known his whole life, and that he knows when they're out and about, he knows when they're not home, when they're on vacation. He breaks into their home and steals, super fancy watches worth multiple hundred thousand dollars, bottles of wine worth $30,000, bottles of whiskey worth over, you know, like just this crazy, super rich stuff. They even have these cool little advertisements for this stuff he steals, you know, that I think is a lot of fun.
I remember you going into like the advertisements, how like they're so well done.
They'll go into like a specific watch, and it's the kind of stuff you never see advertised in real life, because obviously you're not going to see an NFL ad with a $400,000 watch, right?
Well, maybe
99.99% of the people who watch an NFL game cannot afford one,
of course, a Hublot or whatever,
or a $30,000 bottle of wine.
Yeah,
that they're gonna waste in one afternoon. You know what I mean? It's just not something that is gonna be general advertisement that us plebes have access to. You know what I mean? So it's kind of cool to see this well shot stuff where they like go into a lot of detail into why it's expensive, where it's from, who the makers are, all that stuff. It's like a peek into the lives of the rich and famous, but in a way that like, hey, these guys all suck. Everybody here is trash. You know, even the main guys, like the whole thing is like, okay, wow, I really am trash. The guy who fucked my wife sucks, and my wife sucks for fucking him, but also I kind of suck too. And damn, I gotta like get my life together. But instead, he just steals shit, and he refuses to sell his $300,000 car, because then people will ask him, "Oh, what's going on? why aren't you paying for this fancy stuff?" You know, he keeps paying for super fancy private schools and private lessons for his kids, worth thousands per month, because wouldn't wanna. You gotta keep up with the Joneses, right? You gotta keep up appearances, can't let people know you're struggling. So yeah, and he's just stealing shit from people in the meantime, and can't get employed again because he has a non-compete for a long time. So it's just he's just fucked in every possible direction,
man. No, I think again off air you were telling me about this series, and the one thing that stuck out to me, other than just the plot, was this cast. From John Hamm to Amanda Peet to Olivia Munn, these are all people that I've loved what they've done separately.
High quality cast,
and so just to see them put in these situations that you've been describing, I'm definitely interested in.
There's a guy named Mark Tallman who's the NBA player.
Yeah, Tallman.
I feel like they just oh, you're a black guy. And your name is Tallman?
We gotta put you in here.
We have to put you in. It's an NBA player. I mean, Tallman is all we need, right?
Yeah.
He's not particularly tall, is the ironic part. He's like at best like 6'2".
So Mark kind of Tallman.
Yeah. And he has the kind of body shape for like a small forward. You know what I mean? He doesn't look like a Tony Parker type.
Okay. Or like a score guard, whatever. Or shooting guard.
He's like bigger, kind of bulkier, kind of slower.
Gotcha.
He's like taller, kind of like a Grant Hill.
Okay, but he's not
6'7", so you're sitting there like, all right, man, you're not an all-star. You know what I mean? You're too short for this.
Okay.
He's not towering over the other guys. It's funny.
No, I'm definitely, and this was on
Apple TV Plus, I guess, technically. Right. Apple TV is the machine. It's confusing.
Oh, they're everywhere.
It's very poor branding on Apple's part. I will say that. Great quality service. Incredibly poor branding.
they could work on that. Yeah. Apple, listen to us.
Yes.
If they need any more.
They have an Apple TV app, an Apple TV product, which is a thing you buy that you don't have to watch Apple TV on. And then Apple TV Plus, which is their streaming service. And it's as dumb as it sounds.
Well, thanks, Wanda, for your plug of the week, man. Thank you.
Actually,
thanks
the so Apple much. TV app, you can watch non-Apple TV shows through it. I'm not looking into it. It's a mess.
Yeah, I don't want to get you. I don't want to get you riled up. But
it's a hate of the week. Hate of the week next time. See, Apple's poor branding for Apple TV.
See what you've done, Apple. See, it's eating into our segment. But anyway, thank you on. Thank you for that. And also, I want to thank you, listeners, and to our lovely listeners. You can find us on social media and on any podcasting platform. Just search for It Was Mooney to access all of our content. But once again, I'm your host, Kosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And until next time, guys, peace.
Adios.